Think Realty Nation, it's Abhi Golhar, your host of Think Realty Podcast. Super excited to be here today. We're talking about major, major, major important things. Here's the rundown for the show today. Number one, we're talking about some of the hot spots in the West, and is the West turning into the wild, wild West? You're about to find out in just a few minutes. We're also talking about a recent day on the Hill that many of the Think Realty Leadership Circle members had an opportunity to attend. Essentially, they went to Washington to talk to some of the legislators and senators about some of the challenges they're having as private real estate investors. Kind of interesting. My good friend Tom Olson will be talking about his experience on the day on the Hill in just a little bit. We're also following that up with five tips to boost your sales skills and skills in negotiating. I love this topic. It's so important because, quite frankly, as somebody that is negotiating on property values on a very regular basis, and if you're not, well, are you really a real estate investor? So make sure that you pay attention to that segment. Again, that's going to be the five tips to boost your skills and confidence in negotiating. And I'll throw in a couple pro tips on sales there as well. And of course, we have something very interesting, a college scandal. Those that are paying a lump sum of money to get their kids into school, ethical or unethical? Well, let me tell you, I think it's unethical, but I'll lay out the story in just a few minutes. This podcast is brought to you by Renters Warehouse, one of the largest, fastest growing, and highest reviewed property management companies in America. Let's go ahead and get started. Really excited again to have this opportunity to talk about some of the wild, 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 wild West and what's going on. Now, I have an orange highlighter for that reason. I was looking at some of my notes and looking at some of these statistics. You ready? Let's go. There was a huge spike in inventory, huge spike in inventory, right into the teeth of the collapse. As you know, that's exactly what happened around the country. And this is Chris Thornburg, who is the founding partner of Beacon Economics. Quote, I would argue that the market has been behaving quite reasonably. And again, this is some of the Western states. There's been no spikes in inventories, which is a mark of a turndown, of a downturn, and the month supply is still tight at the national level. Unlike the last downturn, there are no subprime loans. So guess what? Does that really mean that we're lending out to people that don't have any jobs and can't afford a loan? Absolutely not. Not anymore. So let's not talk about it, right? There's no reason to talk about a downturn if we're not really going to see one happening because of that reason. That's one of the many factors. And that's what Thornburg's saying. So the median home sales data from Adam Data Solutions revealed that there are five Western markets that stand out when it comes to a steep upward climb in median home prices. And this is since bottoming out there in 2012. Boise, Idaho, Las Vegas, Nevada. And of course, let's not forget the coastal Californias, both northern and southern coast of California, and of course, Seattle, Washington. Now, what's interesting about some of these markets too, talking about Boise, Idaho specifically, topping the Forbes list. It tops the Forbes list of the America's fastest growing cities in 2018. There is an individual there named Mike Brown, who's the owner of Mike Brown Group at Silver Creek Realty Group based in the Boise area. He says, quote, it's an interesting market, but demand is already and always there. Boise, I've had my eye on you for quite a while. It seems that there's a better quality of life in Boise for the most part. Quote, that's why we are attracting people who are relocating. So interesting. I never really thought of investing in the wild, wild West, or really the West. And Idaho being one of those states that I just thought, well, geez, you know, I know it's known for their potatoes, but I didn't really figure Boise would be a good opportunity. But boy, was I wrong. Take a look at Boise, these statistics. Since the market turned around, Boise has really done fairly well. In June of 2014, the median sales prices have only gone negative once. Something to keep in mind. The housing market isn't likely to soften in 2019. The prices will still be rising by the end of 2019, said Donald Holly, who is with the Department of Economics and Boise State University. Now, in 2016, the inventory of existing homes was less than the inventory of new homes. The reason, though, is that Idaho is the fastest growing state, and it's much easier to sell a home today in today's market than it was 5 or 6 years ago. So my takeaway from all this, listen, You find good markets like Boise, like a potential Las Vegas that had a cataclysmic disaster of just the fallout of the market. And you saw that, and it dropped by 50%. But we still have to clue in as investors of where to find good property. And again, according to Mike Brown, who owns the property group in Boise, he says, quote, as a result, whatever deals investors have to find are off market. I don't necessarily believe that to be the case. I'm still looking in the MLS and finding good deals. But you also have to be connected to find these off market properties. Being connected, check us out. Go to thinkrealty.com. We have a lot of market influencers on thinkrealty.com. Get in touch. Let's talk about some strategies on how you can find your next deal. So that's a quick little wrap up on Boise. If you want to learn more and if you want to see some additional market wrap ups, go to thinkrealty.com. Here's what's coming up next. My good friend Tom Olson, founder of goodsuccess.com, will be talking about his experience at the Day on the Hill. That's what's coming up right now. Tom Olson, he's an author, he's a speaker, and he's the founder of Good Success. Tom, welcome to the show. Look at that. That's magic.
What's
so
up,
cool.
Bobby?
Hey, man, good to see you. So you've been doing a lot of traveling lately. We had the opportunity to catch up for a quick second here and there. And recently, over the last maybe couple of weekends ago, before Think Realty Baltimore, you had the opportunity to spend a little bit of time in Washington as part of the member that was a Day on the Hill. That was a lot of fun, from what I hear. I was doing Think Realty Radio, otherwise I would have come up and shown my support and all of that, and I hear that there was just enough space for a 5'5" guy that was really skinny to fit into that room where everybody was talking all the good stuff. So I'm sorry I missed that. But what was the objective of the Day on the Hill? Tell me a little bit more about your experience there.
Well, first of all, I have to say, like, whoever picked the day just did an amazing job because it was like beautiful outside. The cherry blossoms were like just amazing. So whoever did that, you know, thanks to Think Realty for making that happen. And it was a really fun day. Our main objective of the day was to kind of just start a conversation with the Senate and with the people in Congress and their offices. And try to attempt to represent real estate investors, because the Think Realty Leadership Circle and Think Realty, we kind of don't feel like they really understand who we are, what we're all about. You know, a lot of times we kind of just get lumped in to realtors or property managers, and there's nobody really representing us on the Hill. So that in representing us in the laws, you know, we create laws. And we don't really realize that there's a table here and that there's somebody taking a risk that's actually putting money up or taking on debt to be able to change communities. And we were just trying to start a conversation with those Senate offices to let them know, hey, we're here and we're not really asking for anything right now, but we do want to let you know that we'd like to have a voice and we'd like to be able to help you create laws and know what, you know, how it might affect us and how we see the local boots on the ground when it comes to real estate investors.
So the follow-up question to that, what is a general perception of folks in Washington of real estate investors? Do we not exist? Are we invisible? Are we just people that buy houses and hold on to them? What's the general perception?
Well, it's kind of funny because so going through the day, we got to go to about 6 or 7 different offices. And I'll tell you, there's a vast difference, I think, between office to office of who we are and what they think about us. It was really funny. The very first office that we went to, after kind of getting a lesson in like how senators get to pick their office, which was kind of funny, it all goes by seniority. And we were actually in the basement and they were really excited about moving. So we kind of started the day with James and Bridget from Senator Kramer's office. And, you know, it was James who kind of gave us, he was a delightful gentleman. And he really asked some questions. So we were bringing up some issues and, you know, some of the issues that we were bringing up, it seemed like they had never heard of those issues before. And it wasn't that they're clueless in the whole realm of things, but it was kind of like they were clueless to what our pain points are. And I think that Eddie and Think Realty kind of knew that was the case going into it. So we wanted to remind our legislators that we are part of the market too. We can be, and we want to be part of the solution. We're not just greedy investors just trying to make a buck like sometimes we get you know, viewed as, but rather we are here to serve our community and to offer home ownership in some cases. You know, like a lot of the people that were coming with us come in low income areas and offer home ownership in ways that, you know, laws like Dodd-Frank and the SAFE Act have really hurt them and hurt those communities. Even the new voucher program kind of got brought up, and yep. and kind of a lack of capital in to real estate investors, just because of the way that we've redone the way we loan money out, was a lot of issues that were like that were kind of brought up, and it was really amazing to me how the responses were, because some of them kind of knew a little bit, some of them really wanted feedback back from us on how maybe opportunity zones, for instance, have affected us, or what they're looking for, and they were actually looking for the same thing that we were, which was actually pretty cool. So they were looking for an ongoing conversation as well. They all gave us their email addresses. They all kind of said, hey, reach out to us, let us know what you think and how we can help you as well.
Now, that's totally fair. I mean, as investors, we take on a lot of risk, right? When we buy property, we're taking a risk that, quite frankly, we're betting on the neighborhood, we're betting on the people, we're betting on the local government there, and we need to be acknowledged for that in some way. Talk to me a little bit about the SAFE Act, because I know that's really important. The SAFE Act, Dodd-Frank, you mentioned that these were two big items, and then, of course, the new HUD voucher program. Which one hits the hardest for you? Which hits home for you the most, and why? And tell us what was kind of discussed a little bit there.
Well, for me, maybe both of them, honestly. I think a lot of people blame everything on Dodd-Frank, but a lot of the laws that are restrictive actually come back in the SAFE Act. And one of the biggest things that was discussed was that if I'm going to go out and I'm going to do seller finance, for instance, to low-income housing. So because you know that the banks don't want a loan on a property less than like 60, even 75, and sometimes in some cases $100,000. Banks don't want to do the loans. The government red tape has gotten so bad that, you know, the banks don't make any money. So I understand why they don't want to do the loans, but at the same time, now it's created this vacuum in that marketplace. And a lot of the people that were there were discussing this. So I have one person that's actually in Gary, Indiana, that's working right here in my neck of the woods. It's not my company, but they kept bringing up the fact that because of the SAFE Act, they can only do 5 deals of seller finance every single year. And if they want to go over that, then they either have to become a mortgage loan originator, or they have to actually hire a mortgage loan originator, which then, like, the problem with that is, and you think, okay, that's all that has to happen. The problem is the mortgage loan originator doesn't really want to do the deal either, because they're vetting the actual other person's, you know, they would be vetting the investors, you know, basically they're backing the investor. And at that point they don't work for the investor. So it's kind of this teeter totter thing that doesn't really work. Yeah. You know, so they've kind of given us a solution with the MLO, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really work. Cause then in the flip side, from the investor standpoint, they don't want the MLO vetting that person either. So, you know, it kind of like, you know, your hands up in the air, what do we do? So that was kind of one of the biggest.
Come on, like, give us a solution here. What's interesting,
right?
I've been following.
So it was brought up over and over and over again. And so that's like one of the biggest examples of the SAFE Act.
No, that's totally fair. And it's great that, you know, y'all had the opportunity to go out there, put together, of course, by Think Realty. And then Eddie Wilson, as you know, he has many ties to Washington, which is great, because then y'all have an audience. And we have this opportunity to really showcase the fact that this is what investors are doing. And quite frankly, here's the help that we need so that we can do more for better. In Florida very recently as well, their government is looking at restricting lending as well. And it's just kind of interesting where I feel it's just Washington or governmental bodies or senators, committees don't know what investors do and what lenders don't do. And what they do and what they don't do, excuse me. So I'm really hoping that these visits not only are more recurring, but they also serve to identify some of these challenges that we have when we bring them straight there. So that's really interesting. What's your favorite part about being that real estate investor in the ground that you can take then some of these experiences and then share with those folks in Washington the next time that you're up there? What are you looking forward to the next time?
I would probably say the opportunity zones, because like we actually, it was great. We had a conversation with the actual office of Senator Scott, who was the sponsor of a lot of the Opportunity Zone legislation that just came by. And the guy that we talked to wasn't Senator Scott. It was actually his chief legislative, you know, guy, representative. And kind of coming from the feeling of, you know, who does what in that whole office, this guy, you could tell, like, had his heart and soul, you know, invested in that Opportunity Zone law. And he was very interested to know, like, what are the effects? You know, he really wanted the long-term conversation of, can you give us, you know, positive feedback on how this has helped your community and maybe some of the things that we need to fix about it. Kind of one of the biggest things that came out of that, though, was like, all of the regulations haven't really come out yet.
That's right.
And we're, I
isn't
I
it
think
like
as
a
of
stack?
Today,
isn't the Opportunity Zone rule book like this big? Something like this.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. It's like thousands
so, yeah,
of pages.
I, on my
long.
Desk here, here. It's kind of like this, you know, like,
right.
Like
right.
Another one. It's, you know,
a,
it's kind
what,
of.
What, are the, is that, what is that? Like a yeah, blue pages? What do you got in Gary? Is that yellow pages? Like, CDs?
Yeah. This is kind of what it looks like. So, yeah.
Right. That's dismal. I don't have time to read through any of that. Like, here's some light reading. For the weekend.
Right.
That sounds great. Right.
So that was a key discussion point. And we kind of even pushed back a little bit on them pretty hard. We're like, hey, like, when are these regulations going to come out? Because we're supposed to have this investment done by the end of 2019. Maybe are you going to extend it? I don't know. You know, there's a lot of, there's like all these unknowns as, and me as an investor personally, like I'm afraid to use this as a marketing ploy to raise money or do anything I want to do here in Gary, Indiana, which one of my big visions is to flip the city of Gary, Indiana, which is half Opportunity Zone, by the way. And I'm like, I'm afraid to do this myself personally, because I don't know. I don't even know what end is up on this whole thing. You know, it's very unclear of what they're actually going to count and how everything is going to work with it. So, you know, before, until the regulations come out on it and you kind of really have some kind of a footprint to stand on, you have no idea.
Yeah. And that's generally also the challenge that I've been looking at. You know, I purchase single family rentals and multifamily units. I have a fund specifically dedicated to that. And we're looking at an Opportunity Zone fund for multifamily. And it's like, okay, hold on. So how does all this stuff work? And then how are we going to find the operators and then the property management, making sure that everything just flows smoothly over, like you said, the next 10 years, because you have to have your capital locked in there for a 10-year period to really take advantage of those of that tax situation that can really help you as an investor to not only defer, but then you have zero capital gains at the end of the day on your profits that are made. What areas of Gary fall into the Opportunity Zone zones, I should say? Because I think that's really interesting for me now, looking at Northwest Indiana and some of the Midwestern cities to invest in. I mean, Gary's right up there, and you're a big proponent, obviously. You want to flip Gary. Flip it to me, brother. I mean, I'm here.
That's right.
I want to buy it.
I mean, for me, and I'm not even sure I'm personally going to worry about taking advantage of the Opportunity Zone as in the way that the law is written. I'm looking at how can I, as a operator, put myself in front of the opportunity, which is Opportunity Zones, and turn around and sell everybody shovels. You know, everybody thinks that the Rockefellers made money on oil, and they did. However, the reason how they actually got rich was by selling shovels and selling, you know, equipment to people for the gold rush up in Alaska. You know, people don't realize that that's really where they made money, and that's really how they became wealthy, because they put themselves, they didn't go for the gold rush. They actually turned around and said, hey, I'll sell you all the equipment for that. So that's kind of how I am positioning myself in that half of Gary. I don't have the map here to show you like exactly where, you know, the areas are of Gary, Indiana that you know, fall in the Opportunity Zone. But I'm going to tell you about half of the actual city, which is a pretty large city. And the biggest, so far, the biggest thing that we've seen, the biggest change that we've seen from Opportunity Zones is the business coming in. Because I think a lot of people are thinking about Opportunity Zones as just investing in houses, but the opportunity for the business to come in and invest and to put a place there is also probably far exceeds as far as dollars go.
It's incredible.
The opportunity there. So that's what we're seeing. We're seeing billions of dollars in a market that hasn't had, you know, half a billion dollars worth of investment probably in the last 10 years.
We're seeing
multiple billions of dollars of investment happening right now in Gary, Indiana.
Well, let me pull out my checkbook. I have another $1 billion for you. I'm totally kidding. That would be awesome, though. I'm looking at Gary, and I love the fact that you're in the city, you're in the dirt, you have boots on ground, you understand what's going on, and that's just part of the due diligence factor. as just being a good real estate investor. You got to make sure that you know your areas. And I think you understand the market. You understand what's going on. You are taking your concerns to Washington and saying, hey, here's what I'm doing. Here's what I could be doing better if I understood this, these couple of challenges, these couple of things. And maybe there are a couple of small little corrections that we still need to make. So I think the Day on the Hill, from what I understand, was a really successful event. And you're doing tremendous work in Gary, so congratulations on that. And Tom, I want to ask you, what's the best way to get in touch? Because you know what? That's all the time that we got.
All right, well, just real quickly, I just kind of wanted to get to our final goal. So the final goal for the Day on the Hill was to not just kind of to start, have a starting point, but also to continue the conversation. And for possibly years to come. And, you know, and that's kind of what we really tried to focus on is like, how do we stay in touch with you? How do we as real estate investors, you know, be able to speak back to you? And kind of while leaving the amazing event with Eddie Wilson and Think Realty, you know, we kind of thought that we really did accomplish that objective. So that was really cool. So I really do want to thank Think Realty for making that happen. I'm sorry. Now I forgot your actual question.
I was just going to say, I mean, you know, everybody listening, they're now taking, they're taking home a lot of value. What's the best way to reach you? I mean, obviously goodsuccess.com. I think you have a personal website as well, but you're reachable everywhere. What's the best way to do it?
This is the best way to cut contact with us right here. So the Good Success podcast, just like you're doing right now, we even have an app you can go on to, but any of the podcast platforms, I would tell you to reach out there, goodsuccess.com as well. And if somebody really wants to email me, tolson@goodsuccess.com.
And I have Tom's personal cell phone number right here somewhere. I'm totally kidding. I'm not going to do that for you. Tom, thanks so much for joining me and sharing some of those insights on the Day on the Hill and everything that you're doing in Gary. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. What an awesome interview. Thanks so much, Tom, for jumping on with me. Certainly appreciate it. Want to get in touch with him? Of course, go to goodsuccess.com. So here's the deal. We have a lot more to talk about, but before we get to the five tips that you need to be super confident with your negotiating skills, I want to let you know this segment is brought to you by Narada Real Estate Investments, your premier source for cash flow investment property. Visit turnkeyrealestateinvestments.com. Again, that's www.turnkeyrealestateinvestments.com. All right, listen up. If you're negotiating and you need a little bit of that edge, check out Deborah Razzo's most recent article on thinkrealty.com. This is dated March 17th, 2019. Great article. She outlines five pro tips, and she is a wonderfully seasoned real estate investor. She knows exactly what it takes to negotiate a real estate deal. So let's dive in. Rule number one, shift into a collaborative conversation. You know what that means? It's not a look at this body language. It's not going to be like this. It's not going to be hands down, do this and do that, and I want like arms crossed. No, no, no. That's not the way this works. A collaborative conversation is one of education. It's one where you're listening and then you communicate. So the objective here focuses on creative ways to satisfy everyone involved. You want to make it a win-win-win all across the board, right? You don't want to come out feeling like a loser. You don't want the other party feeling like a loser. It doesn't make any sense. You want to encourage a buy-in here. And using the words we a lot, us, together, this really helps to, you know, give that conversation a little bit of that oomph, a little bit of that elbow grease to let everybody know you're on their side. So collaborative conversation. That's rule number one. Rule number two, you got to build in the time and you have to be patient to let these things kind of, you know, matriculate a little bit. Let them marinate a little bit. It's okay. You know, not everything is going to happen like this. I mean, I live in a microwave society. I don't know about y'all, right? But I live in a society where I want my, you know, I want my dry cleaning done yesterday, right? Like I'm generally an extra small, slim fit tailor. Like why can't this be done 2 days ago? Right? Why do you need to take the time to tailor? I want this done now. No, no, no. Good things take time. Rome wasn't built in a day. So you want to ensure enough time for these things for your negotiating to do well. And if you need to hit the pause button, so be it. It's not a big deal. Nothing communicates better sometimes than silence. especially if you're negotiating and you're taking a hard stance on a key component of that negotiation. Price point, for example. Hey, you know what? I think because of the amount of renovations this is going to cost me and my team, I would like to pay more, but our bottom line number is $35,000. That's the silence I'm looking for. You see what I mean? You got to give it a little bit of time. You got to finesse that a little bit. Elbow grease, that's what I'm talking about. But use that kind of tonality in your voice to also communicate that you want to be patient. In my business, in the radio business, and of course, the video business and in the TV business, you have tonality. High and low and fast and slow. So you can pull it back a little bit and then start to coach along and go a little faster if you need. But remember, build in that time. Rule number three, ask questions. Always ask questions. I love asking the question, does this make sense? I also love saying, hey, can we just kind of take this back for a second here? Because I might be missing something and I just want to make sure that everybody's kind of getting it here. Can we go back for a quick second? Can we hit the pause button? Having them say, yes, let's do that, enables you to be a better negotiator and enables you to have a little bit of that upper hand, a little bit of that, so that, you know what? You're controlling the conversation, you're directing the conversation, but you're also winning, which is number four. You want to direct the conversation here. If you're letting the opposing party direct the conversation, guess what you're not doing? Directing the conversation or leading the conversation. Don't you feel that to be a little bit of a problem? Absolutely. You want to be in power play. And that's exactly what you need to do. But you want to do it subtly and you want to make sure it's a win-win. And you want to use the words we and you want to tie in rules number one and two and three. Making sense now? Directing the conversation is really, really important. And you always want to direct it toward the best outcomes and the desired outcome here. You don't want to direct it to something negative. You don't want to direct it to something you don't want. If you kind of feel it's going that direction, hey, let's hit the pause button. What do you think about this idea? Asking questions and then directing conversations. You don't have to just do number four, right? You can integrate everything. Last one, number five, ask for what you want. What a novel concept. Ask for what you want. Guess what you don't get? 100% of the time, you don't get what you don't ask for. Guaranteed, right? That's going to happen. So ask for what you want. And if you need to justify it, justify it. It's okay. Right? Use the power of education and justify what you're asking for and why it makes sense. But you want to be relentless. If it means that much to you, be relentless. It's important. So these are the five pro tips. You want to get involved with Think Realty, super easy. Ask the questions, go to thinkrealty.com. You want to read the article, again, go to thinkrealty.com. Do a search for Deborah Razzo. And the title of this article is 5 Tips to Boost Your Skills and Confidence in Negotiating. Hope you learned a lot. I did. Have questions for me? Go ahead and go to thinkrealty.com and ask me your question. Now, on to something that's kind of interesting that hits home for a lot of people, especially these days when you're hearing news stations and news media talking about college and cheating and getting kids into school. There was an individual by the name of Robert Flaxman, who was a founder and CEO of Crown Realty and Development. He was charged by the Justice Department in March with conspiracy to commit mail fraud and honest services mail fraud. Okay, so very, very severe consequences here. He pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit mail fraud and for paying $75,000 to help his daughter cheat on the ACTs. Huge, big deal here. Don't do that, right? As real estate investors, as somebody that is a member of the community, you want to be a good, standing, outstanding member of the community. You don't need that kind of negative press. That's not good. Seriously, just take like a Kaplan or a Princeton course and you'll do well in the ACTs. And quite frankly, just a little secret, I hated the SATs. I did so badly on the SATs. It was so obnoxious. I ended up like I think my score was like a 1270 or like a 1300. But then when I took the ACTs, I ended up getting like a 34 out of 35, or it was like a 34 out of 36 or something. But that's because I committed to studying. There's no reason to pay somebody to take your exam. That seems like something that's out of a TV show. Suits. I think that's where it's from, quite frankly. Don't do any of that. There's really a lesson to be learned here. I mean, the article, and this is a CNBC article, goes on to say that there are court documents alleging Flaxman, who paid $250,000 to get his son recruited as an athlete at the University of San Diego, and then, of course, the $75,000 to help his daughter cheat on the ACT. Cheating, not good. At some point in time, it's karma. You're going to get caught. The last thing that you want to do is put yourself in a bad position, your family in a bad position. And guess what? That's what's going to be, like, that's attached to you for life. Come on now. If you find yourself cheating, stop, drop, and roll, folks. Not good. Do the honest thing. Be right. Do well for others. Be an outstanding citizen of your community, and you'll do well. There's no reason to cheat through life, quite frankly. Absolutely no way. How did I develop such an awesome voice? Practice. Although I think Matthew's laughing at me. I think he's like, no, not your awesome voice. It's all auto-tuned, okay? That's all auto-tuned. I'm just going to start faking my voice now. Moving forward, it's going to be all auto-tuned. All right, listen, that's the show. Thank you so much. We covered a lot of topics today. I hope you learned a lot. Get involved with Think Realty Leadership Circle. I feel like it will be a really big benefit to you pro real estate investors out there. You can reach out. Go to thinkrealty.com. Tom Olson, he's one of the members of the Leadership Circle and, of course, one of the members of the community in Gary, Indiana. His vision of flipping Gary, an incredible vision and, of course, and a great resource for investors to really look up to. I look up to him and what he's doing every single day. And you know what? I want to be like him when I grew up. So, Tom, thanks so much for doing what you do. And, Gary, certainly appreciate you coming on the show today. It meant a lot. Hope you learned a lot about negotiating as well. And, of course, what not to do. Cheating. Totally bad. Bad, bad, bad. Just do me a solid. Don't cheat. Be awesome. Just be you. All right. That wraps up the show. If you have any questions, get in touch. Head on over to thinkrealty.com. And this podcast, today's podcast, was brought to you by Renter's Warehouse, the largest, fastest-growing, highest-reviewed property management companies in America. Think Realty Nation, it's a wrap. Have any questions? Head on over to thinkrealty.com. And don't let your journey of real estate investing and education stop here. Visit us again at thinkrealty.com. You can get in touch with me anywhere online at Avi Goldhart. Until next time, happy investing.